This is the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we have conversations about church unity, serving cities, and sharing the good news.
You're listening to Exploring Evangelism Myths, a collaborative podcast series by City Gospel Movements and Advance.
We're your hosts. I'm Lizzie Burke in Portland, Oregon.
And I'm Ben Jack in Manchester, England.
Join us as we explore five common myths that hold people back from sharing their faith. Hey everyone, welcome to the final episode of the Exploring Evangelism Myths podcast series. Today, we want to start off with a little thought exercise and ask you, when is the last time you've heard someone's testimony of when they came to Christ? Maybe you heard the story of a friend from earlier on in school who walked through the hard knocks of life and has come around to follow Jesus. Or maybe you've heard the story of a relative at a family gathering, their testimony. And I want you to think also, were you with them in their home? Were you at church? Were you at a camp or retreat? Where were you when you were hearing these testimonies? You know, so often we talk to people who are believers and we ask them, when did you hear a current testimony of someone coming to faith? And oddly, sometimes they can't think of a time in recent history when they heard a story of someone coming to faith. And we want to talk about the final myth today. Evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches because we believe hearing current testimonies is really critical. But Ben, it's not just current testimonies we need to hear. What other kind of stories do we need to hear?
Well, we need to hear all kinds of stories. And we love stories, don't we, as human beings? I mean, I love going to the movies. It's one of my favorite pastimes. And it's been tricky during the days of COVID to go to the movie theater. So I have to get my fix by reading, going old school and, cashing in on Netflix or something. But we love a good story. We love to get caught up in the twists and the turns. And I particularly like real true life stories. I was watching something recently on Netflix and I got like 2/3 of the way through this series. And I was like, this is really good. This is really interesting. And then I found out that it was actually completely fictional. It appeared like it was a true story, but it actually turned out that it was a fictional thing that was kind of riffing on true life stuff. And for some reason, like, I was less inclined to finish the series after that. I was like, I'm not that bothered anymore. Like, it's interesting. And I like fiction and I like all the Marvel movies and stuff, but I thought this was a true story. And now that it's turned out to not be a true story, it kind of had less interest for me. And there's just something so deeply profound about hearing about other people's experiences of life, the twists, the turns, the emotional beats and all that kind of stuff. Do you have like a favorite true life, real person, inspirational story, Lizzie?
Oh, well, I think the first person who comes to mind is Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Oh, yeah.
His example is just, I mean, that's profound for me.
Yeah, incredible. And like you read Bonhoeffer's testimony of his life, either directly from his own work or one of his biographies, and you start to question whether you're even a Christian at all.
Yes.
You're like, wow, this
totally.
You know, but not in a like defeated way, in like an aspirational way. You're like, no, Lord, I want to get closer to you and I want to take some of this stuff seriously and costly grace and cheap grace, and I want to, you know, apply that to my life. Mm-hmm. And not the cheap bit, the costly bit, and figure that out and live for you, Jesus. And so it's incredibly inspirational. And it helps us to think about our own lives before God. But also when we're thinking about people coming to Christ for the first time, that it can draw us back to our own first moments of discovery of who Jesus is and those precious first steps that we took, whether that was, you know, at an event and we can kind of pinpoint a date, or whether it was over a longer period of time that we kind of started to get a grasp of who Jesus was and give our life to him. These stories are essential. But guess what? Not just the story of, like you said, people coming to faith in the first place, but also the story of people who've gone out to win others for Christ, the evangelism stories themselves.
Yeah, totally. And you've shared also that it's not just the success stories we want to hear, but it's also the, awkward fumbling over my words stories, right?
Oh, for sure. I was reading a book recently, about a month ago, from an evangelist type person. And I got about halfway through it and I had to stop reading it because it just started to irritate me, because every example of like evangelistic method that they gave in the book was then backed up by them personally applying that method and seeing like perfect results every single time. And I don't want to be disparaging of those. Praise God for those results. But I was just thinking, for the average reader, actually, this seems unattainable. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that with the Spirit of God at work, anything is possible. And God could yield those results in your life. But in my experience, actually, that's not always the way that, people will reject the gospel when we share it with them at times. And it's important for us to not set a false idea that if you go and share the gospel in this way, people will always get saved. Well, no, they won't. And so what happens when people don't hear stories of challenge or even, you know, failure in kind of speech marks is that people get discouraged when it doesn't play out how it did in the book or the Storyland version.
Yeah, definitely. So let's shift. So the myth that we're talking about today is evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches. And like we mentioned in this introduction, you may have heard stories from your friends or at a family gathering, but what we want to emphasize is telling these current testimonies in the context of church. And this is a myth because oftentimes we get caught up in a specific Sunday rhythm and don't question where there are blind spots. And, you know, I think if many of us, especially if you've grown up in the church, you can probably like nail down to the minute what your church's program is, right? Like you enter, there's a worship song, 2, 3, then you have a little greeting time. I mean, this is the way it is in the U.S., maybe a little bit different in the UK for, you know, these churches. But, you know, I was interviewing pastors, and I've mentioned this in another episode in this series, but with another, you know, a couple other ministry leaders in the Portland, Oregon area, we interviewed 50 pastors between 2019 and 2020 about evangelism in their church. And the question that caused the most light bulb moments for these pastors was, how do you celebrate evangelism in your church? And these pastors, it was really funny because they were like, oh, we don't do that very well, you know?
Proper light bulb moment.
Yes, but you know, it wasn't shaming. It was like an aha moment that, why don't we do that? That would be so easy. We could, you know, insert a simple story in our announcement time. I mean, this could be simple and have a really big impact. And so we often just get caught up in a Sunday rhythm and don't question, hey, what are we missing here? Where are some blind spots? And through these interviews, we heard a lot of pastors say, oh, we're not really good at celebrating. And here's a few clips of what some of these pastors sounded like.
It's been mostly during worship, pause the song and share like a little bit of an overview from their interview.
Yeah.
You know, but we haven't really celebrated those victories of people sharing.
We're trying to more regularly, just on a Sunday morning, incorporate people's testimonies into the liturgy of worship. I wish we could say that we're doing that more regularly. Whenever we do, we always go, that was so awesome.
We probably don't celebrate that well, actually. It happens a lot more than people know about, which then reveals that we don't really celebrate it well.
So, Ben, do you feel like we get caught up in a Sunday rhythm when it comes to regular church gatherings? What is it like for you, especially in your context?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that can be a problem for everybody, is that you kind of slip into a rhythm and a routine, and if something important or key is not part of that, you don't notice that it's missing because you never had it, and you just get used to the routine that you're in. And you know, we don't always like lots of change, do we? And so to kind of justify bringing something new to the table, we have to show its worth, and also people have to get their heads around whether or not they can figure out how to do it well, and is it going to be awkward, is it going to be weird, and stuff. So you have to jump through a lot of those hoops. But it's not just kind of making space for it in our church gatherings. It's making space for it in our own lives as we're going about the ministry that we're going about. Because another problem that we have is that we get so caught up in working with God in the world and letting him work in and through us that we sometimes forget to actually just stop and reflect on some of the amazing things that he's done. One of the biggest regrets I have in my life, Lizzie, is not keeping a journal of what's gone right big time. Are you a journaler? Do you keep a journal?
Oh my goodness, I'm so erratic. Sometimes I start and I'm like, wow, I'm in the flow. I've got this down for a few weeks. And then all of a sudden I'm just not interested at all. I'm more of like a bullet point person, write a couple bullet points, but people who write pages, I'm inspired by, to say the least.
Well, I'm inspired by all of you because I'm not a pages person or a bullet point. I'm just I'm a nothing person. Sounds very condemnational on myself. I'm a nothing person, but it comes to journaling, that's the truth of it. I've never had the discipline to sit down, and yet it is one of the great regrets and something that I'm trying to get better at now, just keeping notes on my phone as I go, because to be able to reflect back on what God has done and some of the little ways at which he's worked, it's easy for me to remember, you know, big salvation fruit type stories that of course that's easy, but actually I think you miss sometimes some of the beautiful, profound things that God has taught you in some of the less obvious situations because you're so busy just getting on with it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I was recently talking to a ministry leader who works in New York City, and her name's Jen, and she works for a interdenominational ministry. So she's helping churches across New York City strengthen their mission and outreach kind of initiatives. And she was gathering people from Crew and InterVarsity and Young Life. And she was saying, hey, could we work together in New York City to strengthen evangelism? But she said, just at the beginning of our meeting, we decided, hey, let's just talk about what's the evangelism temperature in your life. Like, where are you having gospel conversations? Let's just inspire each other by current stories. And she said, we spent the first, 10, 15 minutes doing that. And she said, I'm really sad to say we don't do that in our ministry, but it was so inspiring hearing, oh, I had this one conversation with my neighbor, or hey, my colleague who I've been talking to and they've been really kind of keeping me at arm's length is now starting to open up and ask questions about God and spirituality. And she said, we just felt energy raise in the room, and it was awesome.
So we have this myth because, as you said, we get caught up in our Sunday routines and we don't really question what we're up to necessarily always. And it just kind of slips by. And then we make assumptions that we do it. And we also just cracking on all the time, just trying to get the job done. Again, we kind of forget that we haven't kept a record of what God has been doing. We've missed some really important stories. But why else would a myth like this exist?
Well, unfortunately, we assume we actually have stories to tell. And this is in no way meant to be condemning or shaming, but I mean, I can just share a story from a pastor and city leader who we know in Nebraska, and he has planted churches all throughout his ministry. And he said that in his earlier church plant, he asked his staff of 12 people at a staff meeting, hey, we want to be outward focused. We want to be sharing the gospel regularly. Let's share the stories between the 12 of us staff members of us sharing our faith in the last year. And hardly any of them could mention stories, only three stories between the 12 of them. They could say, hey, in the last year, we've shared the gospel three times. And now he's like, okay, this is a problem. We need to believe that God wants to work through our lives. And we need to believe that he has put people in our lives that we can share the gospel with. So let's just this week, let's ask God for opportunities. They go through the week, they come back, and they're telling dozens of stories. And these aren't like, oh, this person came to Christ, but hey, I had this conversation. Hey, I invited this person to church. And it was the simple things like that. And now years later, they are one of the most evangelistic churches that we know, and they have this mantra, which is out of the seats and into the streets. So they are living it out. But you know, they started off and they said, oh, we don't really have stories to tell. So how can we celebrate evangelism in our church if we don't even have the stories to tell?
Totally. That's such a good illustration of the blind spot thing again as well. And the fact that it's kind of cyclical. It's like a self-empowered cycle. It's like you're not sharing stories because you don't think you have any stories to share, or you've got a bit of a blind spot, but then that's not then encouraging and empowering people to go out and get stories. So then you don't have any stories to share. So you don't share any stories, and then nobody goes and shares. And it's just like the cycle continues and continues. Yeah. At some point you have to get intentional about breaking the cycle, and look what happened for this church in Nebraska. It's incredible.
Yeah. You can change the culture of your life, the culture of your church. It can change. So, we hear this myth that evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches, but Ben, what are some ways that this myth kind of illustrates itself in real life?
Well, I think one of the things that we do is we tend to like seek specific opportunity to shine a light on salvation and salvation fruit and evangelistic efforts. And one of the main ways that that's going to play out is through baptism. I imagine most people who've heard a testimony in church it's most likely to have been during a baptism. Of course, there are other times, and some churches do this really well at other times of the year and have it as a regular part of their services. But for many churches, baptism is kind of like seen as this is the moment, you know, this person's going to make a public declaration of their faith. They're going to invite family, colleagues, friends, hopefully non-Christians. It's going to be a seeker-friendly service and a great opportunity for the gospel to be proclaimed. And this person can give testimony to what God's done in their life. And I'm like, yes and amen to all of those things. Mm-hmm. Praise God. But why are we only doing this at a baptism service? Like there are so many opportunities for us to celebrate what God is doing through people's lives. And guess what? Not just for evangelism in the church, like, oh, invite your friends along, they can hear about it and it'd be a great evangelistic opportunity. Yeah, fantastic. But what about like your regular Sunday, week in, week out, where mm-hmm. maybe the you know, the average non-Christian is not wandering in off the street, but the people of God need to be encouraged and built up. But we're kind of reducing it just to these special occasions like a baptism service.
Yeah, and sometimes these special occasions are once a year or right. twice a year. And we talked to a pastor in California named Kevin Harney with Organic Outreach. And he says, pastors need to remind their people about evangelism every 30 days. Because if you're not sharing stories, reminding them of ways they can share their faith, it won't stick. 30 days is a minimum. And so if we kind of relegate the story sharing to baptisms, one, it really highlights that climactic moment, right? And we've talked about in this series, evangelism is about a moment and a process and a journey.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's also, we need it to be more frequent, right?
Absolutely. As often as possible. I was speaking at a worship conference a few years ago, and there was a panel discussion at the end, Q&A, and people were asking, how can we be more diverse in our expression of worship in our churches? And someone asked me, they said, okay, you're the token evangelist on the panel here. I'm interested to know what you think is kind of really important in our corporate mm-hmm. worship. So if you could only pick one way of worshiping God when we gather together, what would it be? And I was like, well, first of all, thank goodness we don't actually have to do that in real life. Like we can be diverse and we should lament anytime that our worship becomes too restrictive and too just like one size fits all. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, let's be creative and diverse. But for the sake of the question that you've asked, if I had to pick one, I think it would be testimony, like just mm-hmm. inviting people to come up on an open mic. Yes, it might be awkward. Yes, it might be messy and weird from time to time, but just people come up and share what God is actually doing in their lives that week and how God has been at work through their evangelism, through their need, their prayer requests. And, you know, we're so thankful that there's amazing songwriters all over the world writing songs for the church. But also it would be brilliant to think that sometimes that we weren't just speaking out other people's words, that we were actually speaking out words from our stories that God has planted
yes.
in us
yes.
to encourage in our context as well. Yes. I think that would be so powerful.
Yes, totally. You know, and I think sometimes we hear pastors say that, you know, well, we have staff in our staff meetings share the gospel conversations they've been having. And we think, well, that's amazing because the culture of your staff is changing, but that doesn't always trickle down, right, to the rest of the church. Yeah. And, you know, there are other ways if you are a pastor listening and you think there is no way I would ever put a mic up there and have people come up, you know, willy-nilly share stories. Okay, that's totally fine. That aside, there are other ways to share stories more frequently, but don't just have it once a year, twice a year for baptisms. Don't just have it in your staff meetings. Yes to both of those, but add, like, what are other creative ways? So Ben, what are other ways we hear pastors say, yeah, we celebrate, you know, evangelism, but maybe it's not as regularly as we're trying to encourage in this episode?
I guess through like missionaries from that have been sent from the church or are associated to the church in some way, perhaps that missionary comes back for a visit and they begin to give stories of what's been happening out in the mission field. Again, praise God. That's amazing and so, so encouraging. And of course, gives the church lots of opportunity to pray for the missionary, to support them financially and all those wonderful things that go along with that relationship and that partnership. But again, those times can be quite few and far between. And also, they can feel quite removed from the ordinary life. Well, that's the missionary and they're mm-hmm, in a completely different, sure. you know, they're doing all this wonderful aid work in a particular third world nation alongside their evangelism. And there can be this kind of separation between our daily life and what the missionary is up to. So I don't think that always serves the purpose as fully as maybe we would like it to.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it's like, oh, it's the professional person in ministry, like we've talked about in an episode where evangelism's not best done by the pastor or the extrovert or the missionary, but it's really for all of us. And, You know, another way I think that we say we're regularly sharing stories of evangelism in our churches is that we have new members of our church share their testimony, maybe during a membership class. And that's wonderful, but I think that truncates celebrating evangelism to a person's conversion story rather than seeing opportunities for gospel conversations in the day-to-day. It's not just, I grew up in a Christian home, I accepted Christ when I was four, and now I'm here. What are other stories of God working in your life more frequently? When are you stepping out and taking a risk and having a conversation with a colleague about Jesus? Like, these are also the stories that we want to hear more frequently, not just that climactic conversion story.
Absolutely. And I think there's two really important points to make to kind of go alongside what we're talking about here. And the first is that I wouldn't want to be disparaging over any of the things that we've talked about. They are all wonderful, good things. If you're talking about salvation in your staff team meetings, it's like, fantastic, keep going. But how is that trickling down, like you were saying? And if new members classes are happening and we're hearing testimonies in those, wonderful. But again, how is that being filtered out to the rest of the body? So this is not kind of like a disparagement of what is already happening. I think it's a recognition that sometimes we become overly comfortable with those things doing a bigger job than they actually are in reality. Mm-hmm. And then not necessarily exposing to the church to one, salvation fruit stories, which is the second thing I was going to go on to say, that it has to be both of these things. One, salvation fruit stories, but two, also, like you said, Lizzie, stories of people going out and having a go with the gospel. And then the stories that come back from that, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we learn often as much from the ugly, if not more, as we do from the success.
Yeah.
And there's a little irony, which I don't know if you've ever felt this way, Lizzie, but sometimes, like I said, you hear the success story and it can be a bit discouraging because you're like, oh yeah, but I see why that worked for you, but I'm just not worth the same.
That's never happened to me. Yeah, exactly. And if you're saying that, Ben, like as an evangelist, me over here, I'm like, okay, well, then it's justified that I'm feeling discouraged, because if he's feeling discouraged, okay, we're all in this together, you know? So we need all the stories. So, sure. And it reminds me of this kind of image that, hey, if you're drinking water, we're always telling people drink more water. It's good for you. Right. And so you need a certain amount of water to stay alive. So if at some, you know, if you're in a church and you're like, yeah, occasionally, yeah, we do the baptisms once a year. Okay, you're drinking a cup of water. That's great. You're going to survive. But what would it take to flourish? What would it take to run? You got to drink a lot of water. So just keep telling stories. We're just advocating for more.
Yes.
So Ben, you got to sit down with Rachel Jordan Wolf. Of course, we're in COVID-19, so it was over Zoom, I'm assuming. But I'm excited to hear this conversation. Tell me about Rachel.
Rachel's amazing. She was kind of appointed to the Archbishop of Canterbury in the Church of England over here for some years as his kind of head of evangelism on behalf of the Church of England. And she now works for an incredible mission organization in the UK called Hope, which seeks to stir the church across the United Kingdom, across denominations, to be Hope in the UK. And they do all sorts of amazing initiatives. And so Rachel's got loads of experience as an evangelist, as someone who is rooted in a local church herself, but also is blessing other churches, and has a fantastic resource called Talking Jesus, which you can check out at talkingjesus.org, which I think she references in this interview, if I remember rightly. And she had loads of good stuff to say when I sat down with her recently.
Great. Let's take a listen.
So Rachel, in your experience of working with numerous churches and through your insights of the Talking Jesus research, perhaps in particular, do you think we actually give enough time in our church gatherings to celebrate evangelistic fruit?
Great question, Ben. And in fact, there's some really interesting things in there to unpack before you even answer the question. And the first one is evangelistic fruit. And I think that's partly where this whole, if you like, this whole question stems from. What is evangelistic fruit? Well, obviously, it's really obvious when someone comes to faith, yes, mighty celebration. We can capture that story as a church. We're ecstatic. We're likely to have a baptism. All of that's really obvious. And we see that it is, of course, the ultimate evangelistic fruit. But as we know from our research, and as we know from experience with lots of people, if you think about how lots of people come to faith, there are very many, many moments along the way which bring us, if you like, to that ultimate moment when people have stepped from darkness into light and we can celebrate as a church and have a baptism. And what often happens is we don't see or celebrate the steps on the way. And we're not there when people are having amazing conversations. I always talk about the fact that my mother used to go to Morrison's at the same time every week when we could go to Morrison's and go to the same checkout so that she could talk to somebody there. She had many conversations with that woman. So that woman got to know all about her because it took quite a long time for her shopping to go through. And when that woman had a crisis, it was my mother that she turned to. She was able to say, I'll pray for you. She was able to pull out of her bag her Bible reading notes and give those to her. And the woman loved them. And next week said, can I have some more? Now, that woman has never made it all the way along the journey. So we've never had a big celebration of what happened in Morrison's supermarket on a Monday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And actually, I only know because that's my mother. And in the average church, we would never know that story. We'd never hear it. It just would never come up. And there would be my mother and lots of other people like her doing this amazing, having amazing evangelistic impact and fruit in people's lives. But you're right, we wouldn't hear it. So I think we have got to get creative about how we work with this and how we hear what's actually happening and also what we actually think is evangelistic fruit.
So do you think that's part of the reason? Because I think that's a brilliant observation you make about just defining slightly what we mean by evangelistic fruit and the steps along the way. As we know, evangelism is rarely, if ever, an event. It's a journey. And steps along the way are so important. And the way that different people in the congregation can play perhaps a different part of the process along the way. And so if they hear those different steps happening, they might be encouraged about what's going on and think, oh, yeah, I could play that role too. Do you think part of the problem is that people don't have clearly defined understanding of what we mean, what we're talking about, and therefore things, certain parts of it get sidelined?
Yes, I think that's completely true. And because we've always celebrated the end and we've not even understood the big piece in the middle, then people don't know that what they've been doing is really important. Right. And so, you know, we found in the research, if you're not brought up in a Christian family, the next most important thing is that you have a Christian friend in your life and a conversation with them is crucial. So we need to celebrate every conversation, whether it leads to something positive or not, even if that person walks away. Jesus talked to people and some people walked away. But the joy of the Gospels is that we have all these amazing stories and narratives of where Jesus interacted with normal people in everyday life. What would it look like, if you like, if we rewrote, this is a good one, we could rewrite the Gospels, if you like, of the good news of the church today? Well, that would be an amazing book and we'd all love it. And some of those you'd have to have that the person walked away at the end, like the rich young ruler, because they had too much wealth and they didn't want to give it up. And others, like the woman at the well, who ran back and told her city, it would have that end. But wouldn't it be interesting to capture more of that and to know about it? And so one of the simple things we've done in our midweek group, and you've reminded me because we haven't done it very much in lockdown, is when we did the Talking Jesus course, one of the things was to talk about the times that you talked about your faith. And we kept this as a pattern. And so we would just start and have a pause and say to people, what's happened this week? What good stories have you got from this week? And they'd be amazing. They'd be when someone took their car in for an MOT, how they ended up talking to all the garage mechanics. And they'd just be fascinating. Or someone at school, how they had a great chat in the staff room over a cup of coffee. The numerous times we as Christians are asked to pray or we offer prayer. And all these things are an incredibly cumulative, the story of the good news of the church taking the good news out today.
Right.
You do need better ways to capture, if you like, the whole of our evangelistic fruit.
Do you think there's any other reasons why we might be failing to kind of engage with good story sharing around this particular area?
Well, if you think about it also, it's where do we hear people's voices? Whose voices do we hear and where do we hear them? So in an average church setting, you hear actually a selection of a few voices. And so this might be something that does have to function. If it was a large church, maybe you can make sure it functions in every midweek. And you might be asking every midweek group or every house group to collect the best stories that could then be shared across the church. Interesting question. What is the best story? Because that in itself is loaded. So it's been really fascinating because we've had like sometimes we'll get reports from after Talking Jesus course, people will write back and go, oh, it's amazing. that this person, you know, they're a dog walker, and they've just had loads of opportunities since the Talking Jesus course to talk to people who are other dog walkers. We'd never have known that. The person who was doing it wouldn't know it. And I wonder if anyone outside of the course, even in that church, knows that that's happening. Does that make sense? So we all get really excited. That's amazing. And, you know, and so where does that happen? And probably it would be great to have it in the framework of every time a small group got together, if you have that as part of what you do. So yes, we're going to pray. Yes, we're going to read the Bible. And yes, when it comes to evangelism, the one thing we're going to do is share our God stories as to what God has been doing in the lives of the people around us and how he's used us from the small to the what might sound as amazing, because the small matters. And I think that's the big thing. The small really matters.
Right. That's brilliant. And what you're talking about is intentionality. It's like just making it a point of intention. And I guess really that kind of brings us full circle. We started off talking about, do we really know what we actually want to share about? Do we know what we mean by evangelistic fruit? And once we understand what we're actually talking about, why it's important, then it's like, oh, okay, now we can think we should get intentional about this, because it has a value that we didn't see before. And you mentioned earlier about baptism as a time when we shout about people's journey of faith and that kind of definitive important step of baptism. And we get intentional about baptism because we know its value and we see its value. So I guess it's how do we help the church at large and individuals within it to see the value of these things? And with that in mind, I guess one of the ways that maybe we could help people see the value is by seeing some of the benefits of putting this thing. And what are some of the benefits that you see in elevating these stories and being more intentional about them?
I think in the best practice that I've seen, you know, is in the little in our midweek group, that actually more people think to have a conversation. So, and it's the same as the Talking Jesus course. You know, you said that word intentional.
Yeah.
So the more intentional you get, the more intentional people become. And that sounds really crazy. And the more you talk about it, the more people will remember to talk about their faith. So it's like with anything, when you're intentional, it kind of goes round in a loop, doesn't it? So when you start talking about it, then other people go, oh, yeah, no, actually, I could do that. Or someone says, you know, I sent a text to my friend because this has happened in their lives. Oh, yeah, great, I could do that. So I think once you're intentional and you start to talk about something, it helps other people to become intentional, and they start to. And you know what? That is the simplicity of, I don't mention, but the Talking Jesus course, it's quite simple. And you might go, hey, we need a course about it. But really what it does is just raise the bar of, hey, we should be aware of this. We could talk about this. We could talk about how this is going in our lives. We could talk about talking. I mean, it's as simple as that. We could talk about praying for people. We could talk about how we might share bits of our story of what God's done in our lives. And you realise as well, the penny drops that we can't wait for the professional. And that's a big thing. And I know you're going to look at that in a different podcast. But the most important thing around evangelism is that we all matter. We all matter. We all play a part. And the most successful evangelists in our church probably don't realise they're evangelists.
Right.
So I look at one girl, and she's awesome. And that's because she's brought so many friends along to Alpha, some who are being baptised this Sunday. And I don't think she realises that she's one of the most awesome evangelists I've ever met. And when you chat to her, she goes, oh, well, I just keep asking. You know, she just keeps asking. And I was like, do you know what? We need to capture her story. She said, well, I just keep asking. People can say no, can't they? But I just say, hey, do you want to come along to church with me? And it's amazing what's happened around her and how many people have come through to faith just because she keeps asking. And she's just got that kind of like, well, you know, and she won't realize how brilliant she is. I was just thinking, you've made me think, when do we tell her story alongside the story of her friend, one of her friends who's getting baptized this Sunday? When do we tell her story alongside that story? Will there be a piece of her story in that? Because then everybody could be encouraged. You could be that person.
Ben, that conversation was so interesting. You know, after talking to Rachel, what are the things that are really sticking with you?
Well, I think the main thing that sticks out for me there, amongst a bunch of gold that she gave us, was that we need to celebrate stories that are in progress, and not just the stories that have finished, but stories where the journey's still happening and there's still a process ongoing and stuff. Because again, that just ties into what we've been talking about in this episode and what we talked about in the episode of evangelism, not just being a single moment. And the more that we celebrate the ongoing stories, the ongoing journey, I think the more it will encourage men and women of God to get involved in ongoing stories.
Yes, that's amazing. Let's talk about what's the problem with people believing the myth that evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches. Why is it problematic to believe this myth? What's something that comes to mind, Ben?
Well, I mean, we've talked already and a lot about how it can disempower and kind of discourage people when they're not hearing these stories. And this all really ties into the heart of the fact that we're supposed to be a people who remember. We're supposed to be a people who remember first and foremost who God is. You know, the Jewish people, their kind of John 3:16 is actually Deuteronomy 6:4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. This is something that, you know, an Orthodox Jew will recite a couple times daily as a creed, as their liturgy, because they want to remember this fundamental reality that they belong to God and God is one. There is only one God and he is Yahweh. So if right from the earliest pages of the Bible and from the earliest engagement of God with his people, the call has been to remember who he is, because when we know who he is and we remember who he is, we walk in step with him. Second our eyes are turned elsewhere, we have a problem. And we see that in the Exodus, Passover, you know, remember what mm-hmm. God did in terms of rescuing you out of Egypt and then having the Passover meal so you never forget. And of course, we see through the biblical narrative that repeatedly people do forget. And whenever they forget God's goodness and what God has done, it always leads to disaster. But we're not just remembering for our own sake. It's also remembering and telling of the Lord's wonderful deeds, as it says in Psalm 105. So we want to tell of the Lord's wonderful deeds to build up our own community, but also so that the rest of the world will know his wonderful deeds. We are to be a people who remember. And if we're not remembering God and we're not remembering what God can do, is it any wonder that we then start to take our eye off the prize?
Yes, you know, and you keep mentioning these amazing scripture passages, and the idea of remembering is not just all throughout the scripture, but it's also then declare. Once you remember, declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. We are people who declare, as it says in 1 Peter 2. But it's true, we often forget. That's the problem. We think that evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches, but all throughout the biblical narrative and all throughout, at least my life, the theme of forgetting is really present. So we need to tell these stories because I think we often forget that we are telling stories in our communities, our churches, and we don't realize how significant those stories do shape our community. And so I think just consciously reflecting, what's the main story we're telling? What are the main testimonies we're telling? Because they will be shaping what we value and how people behave.
I think that might be one of the most profound things that gets said in this entire series of podcasts, Lizzie, what you've just said there, because we are not absent of story in our community. So the question is, what kind of stories are you going to tell? It kind of reminds me a little bit of like people get a bit nervous about theology sometimes, and they're like, oh, you know, do we need to bother with theology? Isn't that just a bit academic and a bit, I'm just an ordinary Christian. I don't need to. And my dad, who is a theologian, always says, you don't have an option as a Christian of being a theologian. Every single Christian is a theologian. The second you're thinking about God, asking a question of God, reading the Bible, praying, you're doing theology. The only question is, will you be a good theologian or a bad theologian?
And so our
commitment then is to, okay, I'm doing theology. The question is, will I do it well or do it badly for the glory of God? It's the same with the stories that we tell. We will never not tell stories in our communities by the way that we live, by the songs that we sing, by the sermons that we preach, by the way that we live, most crucially in terms of the story that's being written in and through us by God's power. The only question is, will we tell good stories or bad ones? And I think there are stories in our churches. They're not bad per se. They're just indifferent. And we're neglecting some of the best and most important stories that are coming out of our communities that would actually further the mission of God and what he wants to do in and through his church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's another problem. We don't know how to identify the stories we are telling or even tell our own testimony. I was recently on a little road trip with two of my best friends from high school, and we've been friends for over a decade. And I thought, you know, we just need to get away. We need to hang out. And one of my friends, she said, hey, let's tell our testimonies. And cool. I thought, well, that's a good response, Ben. I thought,
I said cool, and you were like, I don't want to do it.
I thought, isn't that the most Christian, boring thing to do? Okay, this is very vulnerable here. I was like, we're on a weekend, let's just hang out, whatever. Anyways, she's like, I'll go first. And I'm thinking it's going to be like an hour and a half, you know, this is the minute I was born, this is what happened when I was 2 years old. But no, she told her story in 10 minutes. And I thought, wow, that was powerful, you know? And she mentioned critical things like her parents' divorce in the last 5 years and how that impacted her, how God shaped her and developed a heart of love in her and all these types of things. And I thought, you know what? I want to tell my story. So the next morning I said, hey, we're on a drive. I'll tell my story. I was the one who took 40 minutes, but I thought, you know what? I don't want to tell my story the way I usually do. I want to stretch myself to tell it from a different angle. I want to press in and understand, God, I know you're doing more in my life and you're even revealing how you've redeemed things in my past that I'm not even potentially aware of even now. So help me understand your salvation in my life as I tell my testimony from a different angle. And 40 minutes passed and I was amazed at how encouraged I was about telling my testimony, but then how through the mm-hmm and wow and, you know, those responses from my two friends, they were really encouraged too. And I just thought, wow, what would it look like, you know, if you're listening to this and you have like a rote, memorized way of sharing your testimony, what would it look like to mix it up and say, what if I started from age 12 instead of age 0? What if I started and told my testimony from this insecurity rather than the, you know, this kind of posture I usually start? It, you know, so just mix it up. And I think that could really help us get excited about sharing our story and also asking questions about other people's testimonies too.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Asking people questions, helping people to like dig a bit deeper and not necessarily just receiving it as they give it to you. Say, wow, that was really interesting. That bit there that you talked about, like how did that make you feel? Or how did you come to that realization? And sometimes that can be really helpful for a person to go, you know, I've been telling this story for 10 years and no one's ever actually asked me that before. And so I've never really thought about it, but that's a really good thing. And suddenly the story sharing becomes a dialogue. We're actually kind of inviting people into our story by helping us to get a greater understanding of our own story, even as we want them to understand it. And that's why we're sharing it with them. So I think it can be profoundly beautiful when we start to actually open up a dialogue within our own story. But again, not necessarily just thinking of our story as being like, this is what happened 10 years ago when I came to faith, but what is going on in your life this week? You know, generally my default position is when someone says, tell me your testimony, the first thing that comes to mind, I guess just because it's how I've been thinking for many years now, is what's God been doing in my life this week? That's where my mind goes straight away, is like, oh yeah, tell me a testimony. Okay, well, yeah, what has God been doing in my life? And I want to tell them something recent, because I want them to see that this is not a historical event, it's a present reality.
Yes. And I kind of told myself years ago, I want to be a person with recent stories. What would that look like in your life too? Okay, so where do we go from here, Ben? You know, we've talked about this idea that evangelism is regularly celebrated in churches, and many of us believe that, but now we're realizing, oh, maybe we could share testimonies more often. And so for listeners, what's like the first step as far as where to go from here?
Well, I think if you're kind of in a church leadership, I would say be honest about what's actually going on in your congregation. Like, how are your services organized and planned? What space are you giving over? And has it become a bit rote? Have you just settled for like the baptism opportunity, the visiting missionary opportunity? Or are you actually creating genuine space for these precious stories? And again, just as a reminder, yes, number one, the stories of people who have come to faith and God is at work in their life in some way. And number two, stories of people who are stepping out with the gospel. And how did that go? Stories of people coming to faith for sure, but also stories where it didn't necessarily go so great, but we can then invite the whole church to pray for that person that was spoken to. And again, bring the church into the story, make them part of it. So be honest about what's actually going on at the moment.
Yeah, you know, and through the interviews that I did with Portland area pastors, it was at that moment of honesty where they realized where they could go from there. They said, right, okay, this is where we're at, but this is where we want to go. So now that we've been honest, we know what step we can take next. You know, another piece of advice for where to go from here is just plan ahead. It's really simple. Just choose to block out a time during your Sunday gathering. It doesn't have to be long. You can, you know, 2 minutes during your announcement time, or quickly in between worship songs, tell a quick current testimony. You know, one of the people you heard during these interviews on the episode, Evangelism is Supposed to Be Easy, Dr. Jerry Root, talked about how he created space in his small group time when he was like in his 20s. And he said, you know what? we're just praying for somebody's grandma's elbow and my neighbor's cat. I want to pray for people who are lost, people who don't know Jesus. And so he just said, I'm going to be sharing testimonies of how I'm reaching out to this guy, Bob. And over time, you know, over a few weeks, he said, hey, to his small group, hey, pray for Bob. I'm going to have a conversation with him this week. Pray for Bob. I had the conversation. Now I want to go deeper. And then the next week, hey, here's Bob, meet Bob. He came to Christ this week, you know? So he just invited his small group into sharing current testimonies as he was living one out and sharing his faith with Bob. And I just thought, hey, that's really practical during your small group, even during the simple prayer time, which every small group has, what would it look like for you to share a story of somebody you're sharing your faith with?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are not in kind of church leadership, you don't have any kind of control over the program and the service running order, help your pastor and your leadership team to plan ahead by going to them in advance and saying, look, I'm often engaged in talking to people about my faith and this, that, and the other. And I sometimes have good stories to tell. Would there ever be an opportunity for me to share that? Like I could record a 30-second video on my iPhone and you could play it, or I could, you know, if you can give me 30 seconds on the microphone or something. But help your leadership team to plan ahead by offering them in advance that content for which we're asking them to plan for.
That's really helpful. You know, and if you're doing a serve day, even one thing that we've seen a lot of pastors kind of assume is that as their people are serving the community, raking leaves or filling backpacks for schools, that gospel conversations will automatically happen. But we realize that's an assumption. It's not necessarily true. But if you train your people and say, hey, maybe the serve day isn't the best time to have a gospel conversation. If God opens the door, great. But if not, that's okay. What the serve day is a great opportunity for is to build a relationship and say, hey, would you want to come to a barbecue? And then maybe at that barbecue, you can get to know more of their story. But what would it look like just to help change the perspective of your people before a serve day and say, hey, gospel conversations may happen. If they don't, use this time to build relationship and see what happens from there.
I think sometimes the pressure that can come after a discussion like this is that people are like, yes, I want to do this, but they feel the pressure to almost radically reinvent the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Throw the baby out with the bathwater, start again with a blank canvas, and like, okay, now we're going to have a 90-minute service, and it's just going to be people telling their stories. And it's like, no, don't worry. It doesn't have to be a complete reinvention. Probably one of the best bits of advice we could give here is to say, just start small. It doesn't have to be a complete revolution. Just start small. How could you leverage time, for example, during your normal notices period? How could you leverage time between you singing two songs back to back? Is there a 30-second window for someone to quickly jump up and just offer a quick story within that? Start small and see how you go.
Yeah, and it just be consistent. Start small, be consistent. More than annually. We've said at least every 30 days. And, you know, we just want to share a few really simple practical ideas we've seen churches implement even this year. So there was a church called Reality LA in California, and they started these Jesus Changed My Life videos for Easter. And they just trained their people to share their story, you know, 30 seconds, 90 seconds on Instagram or Facebook on Easter of 2020. And so on Easter, that whole week, they were just inundated with all these Jesus Changed My Life videos. And I thought, wow, that's a really simple, great way to see, oh, my friends are sharing their story too.
Yeah. And I know that producer Caden in particular is very fond of the I Am Second videos. They had a big impact for her in her walk with Jesus in the early days. And I'm not surprised, because they're videos of people sitting in a chair saying, look, this is how Jesus changed my life. I am second. He is first. That wasn't always the way. And that testimony of whether it's a sports star or a rock star or all sorts of different types of people telling their story. God is at work still today, still changing people's lives, still saving people. And they're beautifully done. And so again, just another example of, if you're not necessarily sensing these stories present in your community, there's plenty of stories out there that you can get, show them, and see how that then inspires those stories from within your community in the long run.
Definitely. You know, and a final just piece of just practical advice is, again, if you're in a staff meeting or you're at a faith-based nonprofit, or even just with your small group or family, start the conversation by saying, hey, does anybody have any current gospel conversations they want to share about, just to encourage, to inspire. Could be simple talking to the person at the grocery store or sharing with somebody on a bus, but just keep sharing those stories and you'll be amazed over time, just being honest, being consistent, starting small. This will start to change the culture as you share testimonies regularly.
Absolutely. And do it with transparency and invite people to reveal their weakness. And, you know, if we're not able to do that within the church, then there's probably something wrong. But within the safety and the community of our family, of our church community, to invite people and say, look, step up, tell us how you've been getting on. Did it not go very well? Don't worry about it. Like, just share what happened. And let's pray for that person that you spoke to. If it's a story of you reaching out to somebody, you know, let's get involved in that process together and hear those stories. And like leaders, take the initiative on that, that we're not just presenting ourselves as the perfect, I'm the evangelist. Whenever I talk to somebody, they always get saved. Lord, if only that was true, I would be delighted. But actually, maybe that's got more to do with my ego at times. I don't know. I want it to be all about the kingdom of God. And ultimately, I don't want people to come to faith so that I can be like, yes, I'm a brilliant evangelist. I want people to come to faith so that they know their creator and inherit the kingdom. And when that doesn't happen in a conversation, guess what? It's not the end of the story. The story carries on as the people of God choose to invite God into the situation by getting together as a family, affirming the person who stepped out, and powerfully asking God to get involved in that situation, even as we are not physically involved in it anymore, by praying and saying, God, will you now work in that person's life? And that kind of story sharing is not just about telling a story, it's about being the story.
Hey, this is Caden Lashway from the City Gospel Movements team. We created discussion questions for each episode for personal reflection or to use with a small group. You can download this guide for free at evangelismmyths.com or click the link in the episode description.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the City Gospel Movements podcast, a ministry of the Luis Palau Association. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and Google Play. Leave us a review or reach out to us on social media to keep the conversation going. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at City Gospel Movements.
We'd like to give a special thanks to the Luis Palau Association team, to Joy Buongiorno for producing this episode, Kevin Palau for your radio voice intro, Stephanie Weber, you da boss, no literally, Spencer Reed for listening to hours of interviews and being a Google Doc ninja, and Caden Lashway for running the show and telling us what sounds good and what doesn't. From the Message Trust, shout out to Peter Thompson for responding to emails quicker than Ben Jack and for not getting fired. And finally, this series would have not happened without our interviewees, Charlie, Jonathan, Caitlin, Paul, Christine, Jim, Rob, Marissa, Lydia, Manny, Sally, and Bruce. Thank you.